Frederick Fauré is our guest. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with you yet again, Dr. Fauré. This notion of philosophy, Bill, I'm going to hand that back to you. You being well, so I'd, polite.
I'll get over it. I was thinking of a story and thinking about talking with you that goes back 3 or 4 years. We sat in an event featuring a Western psychiatrist and a one of His Holiness's
Dalai Lama's
personal physicians, and what they were doing was, you know, the basic drive was to look at science from those two different perspectives. And in fact, they took 40 minutes each to do that, which was a fascinating thing to watch. So. Oddly, the visual representations looked remarkably similar, which was interesting. But what they did was to do a diagnosis on a person who was suffering from multiple myeloma, and in fact was dying from multiple myeloma, and basically looking at depression. That's sort of the context in which this happened. This went on for 3 or 4 hours, extraordinarily fascinating. But somewhere in the course of this, as the Tibetan doctor was doing his diagnosis, you know, he went through and used different techniques. It was much more, actually oddly, much more physical than the Western doctor. You know, we think of them, you know, them being metaphysical and we're physical. Yeah. The Western doctors were sitting across, you know, basically across the room asking questions, and this guy moved up close, touched him. But it, as he was finishing up his diagnosis, he said, and finally, what's the meaning of life? And it just stopped. It stopped the room because we'd all, you know, we just don't ask that question anymore. No. But, you know, when we got through being sophomores, we stopped talking about the meaning of life.
Alas.
As they were sort of doing their recap, they had a lot of doctors there. This was
physician doctors,
physician psychiatrist and psychologist. One of them said, one who was doing the oncologist, the man's oncologist said, "You have changed the way I will do medicine." Because we have all these treatments, and we don't know which one is appropriate. And the core question is, for you, what's the meaning of life? But I say that in this context because as much as anything, the appeal of philosophy early on, I mean, to a young person, is, well, maybe I can figure out the meaning of life by studying philosophy. And it seems to me that in a way, those, you know, the kinds of stories you're talking about as opposed to this analytical approach, gets us back to that core question for each of us individually, but also as a community, as a culture, as a society, as humans, that's right at the heart of it. And we haven't solved it yet.
No.
Or have we?
I'm not sure that's a kind of an issue to be solved, but it's one to be pondered and chewed on. And when we come to holding a position for a while anyway, and need it and
a lifetime or so.
Yeah. And then we know something more about who we are as a result of having tried to deal with the context of us. And without the context, there is no meaning. I believe that very literally, that meaning depends entirely on context, and including language meaning, including art meaning, including all the rest. And philosophical meaning depends upon trying to figure out what the context is within which the questioner is saying, what is the meaning of life? Because the answer to it will say something about who he or she is.
You are specifically, you have many talents. One of the things on which you have concentrated is the philosophy of technology. Mm-hmm. And as you talk about context, in a time when it's easy to think we are subsumed, we are owned by, we're controlled by technology.
Yeah.
The idea that the context is important, but it maybe isn't everything, that there still is an independence within that technological milieu, if you will. I'm sorry, the 30-cent word there. The interaction between us and whether our technology is a stone tool, an axe, when we're still on the savannah as early Homo sapien, or the latest, newest, shiniest, the technology part of knowing, being, and acting is very important, isn't it?
Once you have taken that stone and chipped it and made a hand axe out of it, then the context is something that we've partly created. And so it's not independent of us anymore. And likewise, even more obviously, the context of high technology today is something we've created And now we've created something that's very hard to get out of and very hard to think about changing. But fortunately, I believe that it is, if we can remember that we created it, we can remember that we can change it. And I believe that the first step in changing it is to think deeply about who we, the creators, as well as the context that hold us, are and want to be. Because after all, it's the purpose-led life that we are looking towards, and that's what's unique to human beings.
I think of you as, forgive me, a radical contextualist, sort of.
I give permission.
Contextualist?
Contextualist.
And I say that because this is not just a question of, you know, us individually, the local context. This is a global condition. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, one of the things that I admired about this series of books is that you really go back to first principles. I think I was going back to the Big Bang and coming forward in the total context of not just human experience, but of the experience of the universe, which is, you know, fairly broad context and can seem overwhelming. But you in doing that, and again, this goes to the importance of philosophy, you take all that context and then bring it down to the context that we inhabit, or some of the context we inhabit. And that seems to be dead center of, and it's what you're saying, understanding who we are, what we are, and in the absence of that, we're essentially lost, aren't we?
I believe we are, and a lot of people are lost. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not saying everybody has to be a philosopher. I mean, that would be a pretty silly thing to say, because it takes a lot of work and a lot of discovery of logical constraints, and I was saying something a little harsh about analysis at the beginning. But I want to say now that without logic, without the structure that logic provided, the early Whitehead is over against the last, later Whitehead, we wouldn't be able to do much in the way of critically re-examining ourselves and the context itself.
But that goes to the, I mean, it seems to me to go to the Enlightenment that I think we still haven't quite internalized. There's the logic, which was being applied well before the Enlightenment, that there's also this other thing which gets to the context, which is evidence, which is establishing a relationship between the exterior world as best we can, and what we are, the statements we are making, the assertions we're making, the things that we say are true. So that, you know, that evidence piece seems to be very important, and it seems to be particularly important now, at a time where, you know, people are back telling faith stories. You know, it's true because I want it to be true,
dear.
Because I read it in a text that I happen to like.
I know. There's a creeping know-nothingism in contemporary society that really bothers me. And people don't want to be confronted with the fact that there's no evidence or that the evidence is flawed. Or if you push on the evidence, it eventually turns squishy.
Or there is no evidence.
There is no evidence at all.
You know, the evidence is, I want it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, specifically things like creationism,
right,
and so on. We just had a big trial on these matters in Pennsylvania, the Dover case.
Yeah.
I'm glad to say, may I mention just a nice thing,
sure,
about the Dover case? Judge Jones, who was the federal judge in that case, came and talked to the graduating class last year at Dickinson College because he is a Dickinson alumnus. And he said that he couldn't have dealt with that case if he hadn't been, because it took so many different disciplines together and he had to meld them in his mind, if he hadn't had a liberal education, such as is offered well by little colleges like Dickinson College.
In two sentences, if you can just sum up this case, it would probably be useful.
Oh, it was the school board in Dover, Pennsylvania, that required a statement be read having to do with Darwinian evolution as only one of the possible answers to the understanding of the universe we live in, and that one should also consider, take creationism seriously, or intelligent design,
mm-hmm,
which is what was being called at that time. Now, this was ruled out as actually in support of religion by Judge Jones, who saw through the subterfuge that was actually being put on by the school board.
And in fact, called it what it was, as a religious perspective.
Yeah, religious perspective.
And in America, we have a separation of church and state, and that must be honored in the public schools.
Yes, right. Yes. Thank the great Constitution.
Well, it should be.
Well, it is. It's the law.
But it's an ongoing struggle, which is part, you know, why these things are so important.
That's
I tend to think, and I think a lot of people suffer from this affliction, that that history is a ratcheting forward process. Mm-hmm. We solve that problem, and we never have to address it again. Mm-hmm. We'll deal with some further problem. And I go back to the Enlightenment as an example of that. Mm-hmm. For years, I thought that was done. We had that evidence was now an integral part of how we did science, particularly science, but also how we had discussions with one another, mm-hmm. public and private discussions, that evidence was an integral part of that. And yet, the gears seem to have slipped.
Dr. Ferret has given you both an oh dear and a terrible frown, so perhaps that's not the...
Was I giving him a frown?
Oh dear!
Oh dear, it's slipping. Well, it's wonderful that you are aware of the importance of evidence. And logic. I mean, both of them. Logic is the internal structures of conceptual relations, and evidence is the external force of experience.
And when we come back, I'm going to go to the excluded middle. I love this. We'll be back in just a moment. Dr. Frederick Ferret, be with us when we return.